Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Schmo Zone podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Sheath Underwear, the only pair of underwear the Schmo wears. They are so comfortable, the anatomical isolation pouch for male extremities. Never wear normal underwear after wearing these. That pouch keeps the balls nice and fresh. Check them out at sheathunderwear.com. The promo code SCHMO, get 30% off. You will not be disappointed. And our other sponsor for today's podcast is Jocko Fuel. Origin Labs, baby. OriginMain.com. I love using Jocko Discipline Go. Much better alternative than your normal energy drinks. Natural stuff going in there. And I love their protein. Their whey protein's great. I love their pre-workout. And they got great stuff. Clean supplements. Check them out. 15% off using the promo code SCHMO, OriginMaine.com. OriginMaine.com. Promo code SCHMO, 15% off. Good, clean products. Let's start the show. Welcome back to the Schmo Zone, episode 43. I'm Dave Schmolensen, a.k.a. The Schmo. My co-host is...
Helene Sports. Keep your eyes on the game.
And yes, they are on the game. Loaded show today. Thanksgiving weekend. We're going to have Coach Mark Montoya and Alex Hernandez in studio. We're going to kick it to Dr. Ronald Cohen here shortly. And the reason why we're going to kick it to Dr. Ronald Cohen is because we had Cub Swanson on last week, and he had reconstructive surgery on his knee. The Schmo, myself, Dave, I've had meniscus tears in both my knees, and I didn't go the route of surgery. I had PRP treatment, platelet-rich plasma, just an alternative to going under the knife, and I know it's not for every situation, but just wanted to get Dr. Cohen's thoughts, so I know he's going to be here shortly. So it'll be pretty cool.
I know. And you know what? It looks like we're getting a call right now.
Oh, he's early.
Yeah.
All right. So now I'm going to introduce our guest, Dr. Ronald Cohen, the man who fixed both of the Schmo's, I guess mine, meniscus tears. Dr. Cohen, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Of course. Look, it's no secret. I try, or the Schmo tries, to live an active lifestyle. I work with athletes, MMA fighters that are bound to have injuries. On our last episode, we have UFC veteran Cub Swanson, 37 years of age, coming off of an ACL tear and a torn meniscus. Let's start off with this. I know you work with stem cell treatment and PRP treatment, among other things. How do you know whether to go through that route rather than opening up your knee and doing a whole reconstructive surgery?
You know, that's a great question. And it's one of the issues that we deal with whenever we have, anybody with an injury, but especially an elite athlete, because return to play is really one of the biggest things that they're concerned about. There are criteria that we look for with ACL tears. I don't want to get too technical with this, but, you know, we examine the patient, we look at the MRI. If we see any intact fibers, we feel that we have a pretty good chance of actually repairing that with a percutaneous, meaning non-surgical approach, and really try to avoid an open surgery, which, has its own complications and has a really long rehab rate. You know, these are elite athletes. They want to get back into the game. They don't want to have to go through a year of rehab before they even get back in the ring. So, you know, we take all of this into consideration. We can also do what we call a diagnostic injection, where we use fluoroscopy, which is like real-time x-ray. We can inject a little bit of contrast dye literally into the ACL, and we can see if that contrast leaks out or if it stays contained within the ACL itself, showing us that maybe it's just a partial tear. Now, if it's a complete tear, and the two ends of the tear are completely pulled apart like an elastic rubber band, that's beyond what we can offer help with, and we would refer that to the orthopedic surgeon. We also have to take into consideration that there are frequently meniscus tears that coincide with ACL tears. And typically a surgeon is going to go in and shave those and remove tissue. Whereas with a regenerative procedure, our goal is to preserve the tissue and to facilitate tissue healing. Now, specific to ACL injuries, the fact that somebody had a trauma that was severe enough to ding the cartilage and that was strong enough to tear the ACL, it was also strong enough to ding the cartilage and begin the process of developing osteoarthritis. And we can go in and we can actually offer protective measures that can help a patient stave off the development of arthritis for years to come.
So when I first found out about PRP treatment, stem cell treatment, I remember I was in high school. I remember like Kobe Bryant, Brian Urlacher going overseas, going to Europe and getting their blood platelets and getting it spun and being injected back into their bodies. And then I think relatively in recent history, in the past decade or so, it's come over here to the United States. So walk us through, like, this is a legal procedure where you are taking out the platelets, your blood platelets, out of your body. You're drawing your blood. You spin it in a machine, and then you inject it back into you, and then it heals over time?
That's pretty much the gist of it, yeah. You know, it's well known, well documented that our own blood, our own tissues contain cells that are very rich in healing factors. If you think about a normal injury, you know, you roll your ankle, you get punched and you get a bruise or a cut. You know, you don't go to the doctor for every single injury. Your body actually heals itself. Right. Well, how does it do that? It rushes blood to the area and it delivers these growth factors and healing factors directly to the area in need. So that's essentially what we are doing. We're taking your own growth factors and we're harvesting them from your blood or from your bone marrow. We're concentrating them. And then we are very precisely placing them in an area of need and asking them to do what they would naturally do. And that's really, in essence, what it's all about. With PRP, which is platelet-rich plasma, we're using the power of the blood cell called a platelet, which has something called platelet-derived growth factor within it. And we deliver it right to the area of need, and it releases those growth factors, and it stimulates the healing cascade. Similarly, in a condition that might be a little bit more severe, like a larger rotator cuff tear or really severe arthritis, we may jump to the added power of a stem cell, which is essentially an immature cell that has the power to grow up and differentiate and turn into the type of cell that your body needs, all the while acting as a little general contractor inside the cell, directing all the other cells what to do and what to become and how to facilitate tissue healing.
Well, you definitely helped me out a lot. I remember when I tore those up, we did a couple of rounds of injections. I know it took at least 6 weeks before the first injection, the second injection. I'm an active triathlete. I remember I got to do some work with Manny Pacquiao afterwards. And Dr. Cohen, you really helped me out. Where can our audience find you? Tell us where we can find you and book an appointment if they need some help.
My office is in San Diego. We can be reached at coastalregenerative.com, or you can call us at 858-345-1055.
Excellent. And before I let you go, one last thing. Look, I want to get your thoughts on CBD and using CBD as a recovery method.
Yeah. I think there's a lot to be said and a lot of good things to be said about CBD, to the point where I've started carrying it in my clinic and offering it to patients. We're still learning kind of how and why it works. But what's really important is that it does seem to work, and there don't seem to be any adverse effects that are associated with it. For a lot of our procedures, things like anti-inflammatory medications like Motrin or Naprosyn, they can really interfere with the effectiveness of a treatment. So we don't want patients using those. And if we have an alternative that's effective and doesn't interfere, well, that's a plus all the way around. There are a lot of preparations out there. I think the biggest obstacle right now is trying to figure out, because there really is no regulation for the stuff yet, trying to figure out if the product that you're using really has gone through the proper testing and has the concentration that they claim and that you really are getting what you paid for.
Excellent. And I'm sure that will evolve over time. Dr. Cohen, we really appreciate your time and thanks for stopping to the Schmo Zone. And hopefully these knees stay pretty clean for the time being, or I guess I'll have to pay another visit.
We're happy to see you anytime.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, Dr. Cohen. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. In studio today, we have Factory X's finest, Coach Mark Montoya, and the great Alex Hernandez, UFC lightweight.
What's up, doggy?
Good to see you guys.
It's good to see you out of character, honestly. It's a first for me.
Yeah. What do you think?
Oh, he's lovely. Like we just joked, it's kind of like that neglected stepchild. That never gets enough screen time, but he's out here today. He's out to play.
The one day a week where I feel like I could just be myself, right?
That's right. That's
can
right.
breathe a little bit.
Dave Shine, yeah.
I appreciate you guys coming here in studio. Are you getting a little cabin fever over at the host hotel?
That we were. I mean, that's why we had to break these guys out. We got Coach here and Professor Busy in the back who didn't get a chair, but he's out here. We just needed to get a break away from the residence in.
Professor gets the behind-the-scenes look. We didn't have enough mics. I'm sorry. You're the odd man out.
He's a ninja, though. That's what he does. He hides in the background.
He's always in the shadows.
Yeah, he's a ninja.
That's true.
Hey, Schmall, I'm proud of you guys. The last time I did an interview with you was on the couch in the middle of a hotel, Like, we picked the hallway. Now look, we got the Schmo Zone.
It's a Schmo Zone, yeah.
I mean, this is gangster, bro. I'm really proud of you guys.
We've come a long way from the Minneapolis Hotel. I remember that.
Oh, was that where it was?
It was in Minnesota. I remember it was the Francis Ngannou JDS card, the UFC fight night.
Okay. Yeah.
And yeah, we did it on the couch. It's always comfortable doing interviews on the couch.
Yeah, it's easy. Gotcha. We just had to move a few pillows. Alex, it's okay. Don't be jealous. It's
very intimate. Yeah, it's a lot, very, very intimate. But yeah. This is my first. It's my first studio.
First studio.
I think I did a local one maybe back in San Antonio before, but never a zone for sure. I've never felt so in the zone. So this is new.
Well, you're definitely in the zone for your last fight. I know you joined Factory X, Coach Mark Montoya. Yeah. You switched training camps, and look, man, 1-0 in the new digs.
Yeah, 2.0 version paid out. So like we were saying, that went really well, and we're happy with it. And we were just talking today actually on some corrections we need to make for the next one, but. Yeah, there's definitely the right momentum, and it took a little bit to get the ingredients right, but now I think we've got the recipe. We want to keep it running. You know.
Are you going to break the news, Helen, or am I going to break the news?
About who sat in that chair before?
Yeah, a few weeks ago. Called this guy out. I'm not sure if you saw
it. Yeah, literally. In that exact chair, Brad Riddell.
Oh yeah, I've got a docket full of call-outs right now.
I'm sure
now,
he's one of many.
Yeah, so he's certainly in the queue.
He definitely called you out, man. What do you think of that matchup? Obviously, it might not be next, but it's something that you could see down the road.
Yeah. Like I said, there's a number of guys. Definitely always. I mean, really, since the beginning, they've always been calling me out, And I've never like paid too much mind to anyone else's concern because they're always working, you know, their strategy for, you know, their future, whatever. And I'm kind of trying to organize myself, but I really like that. I like that matchup a lot. Like I like any matchup. I mean, I've never said no to anything in my life. And Brad's great. You know, he fought Silva on that card when we were, that was the Abu Dhabi card.
Yep.
With Brandon.
Yep.
And yeah, he looked like a dog, if nothing else. You know, he had showed a lot of fight in him, and yeah, put him in the mix.
I mean, what's new, right? I mean, when you're doing well, everyone's calling you out. They want an opportunity to do better. So that doesn't surprise me that everyone's calling him out.
Well, out of everyone that's been calling you out, who intrigues you the most?
Brad's certainly one of them. Yeah. You know, truthfully, it's really just about timing and who's available. I haven't gotten any offers from Shelby or anything serious. A lot of people like start buying into whatever they see on social media and think that that's like what's actually being passed across like the table. It's not. And so, you know, I've just been organizing with my team and waiting for a response from Jason House on Shelby and seeing like what the real options are, like who's actually available, who can actually fight, who's not just talking, but readily able to take a fight. And ideally in December, like, you know, I've been really looking at this December 19th card. So I'm really, yeah, just really open-minded. Just it's about timing and organization of what we want to get done in the next year. So, whoever.
It seems like with COVID going on, there's fights that are falling out every day, all the time.
I mean,
like,
yeah, it's insane. So.
I'm sure Jason, I think he brought it up too. I mean, he's always on the phone with Sean Shelby. They need replacements all the time. Like, and Coach, you can weigh in on this too. It's like... does it intrigue you at all for just stepping up last minute for a replacement fight? Or does it depend on matchup? Or is there something specifically you guys are working on right now and leading into this guy's second fight with you guys?
Well, I think with the whole thing with COVID and the coronavirus, the whole thing, the biggest thing that we had to do is make an adjustment. I mean, we made an adjustment to where you're not getting 8, 10, 12 weeks camp. That's it. You can't, we're not in camp. We gotta just stay ready because essentially the UFC gave us opportunities to jump on and none of them had a long duration. I mean, I've only had a few fights since May, since they went back to work, meaning the UFC, where we had more than a few weeks to get prepared technically. So, you know, we, as a coaching staff, we got together and talked about that and said, hey, in order for us to take advantage of this opportunity, we got to change how we're doing things. And then we also have to mentally speak to our fighters and our team about where they're at. Mentally, you're not getting camp type fights. You're getting opportunity when opportunity comes up and you have to stay locked in and ready. And so diet, training, PT, all the stuff that they would typically really focus hard on inside of a camp, they've got to do consistently. And it's hard to do that because mentally you can potentially fatigue out. And so it's a fine balance, but our team has done an amazing job this year and we're having a phenomenal year because of them adapting to that and us adopting the philosophy of we got to change something here.
Yeah. And like, to Coach's credit too, you know, like I've always been known as somebody who's like kind of perpetually in a camp mode. You know, I'm always on point with my diet and the training regimen doesn't ever really change. And I've always carried that attitude lonesomely back home often. And then when I came over to Factory X, it was like, that's the culture of the way we operate. And he's got an expectation of everybody living in Denver and all kind of operating under that same cloak where, you know, we're always fight ready and we're always almost in camp. And there's certainly like tiering and like peak management and things like that for a fight. But, you know, you walk into that room and you've got like, I've got handfuls of guys all around my weight with the same drive, the same ambition, the same goal in mind where it's like, hey, we're ready to fight on 2 weeks notice, 3 weeks notice. And I don't really see any other gym that puts people up like that on 2 weeks, 3 weeks notice and catches bodies like so readily as we do. Like we get a ton of victories off of short notice fights all day because of the culture and the attitude we share as a group, as a team. So it's a good place to be for the climate for sure. Like I really don't know a better place to be, the Factory X, for the climate of what we're facing right now with COVID.
Now, Coach, in Fight Island, when we spoke with Alex, he spoke very highly of just the gym, the culture. Obviously, you as a great coach. So what's it been like to work with Alex and leading into that first round knockout performance of the night?
Yeah, I've had I've had the opportunity to, you know, get many athletes that have come in for the first time and train with us. But something that was different about Alex is, I mean, I watch fighting consistently, not just my guys. I watch it all, whether it's on the regional scene, the local scene, or of course, you know, in the UFC level. But I've been watching Alex for a while fight. I mean, from his LFA days, obviously, into the UFC, and he always seemed like he was cut from the same cloth type kid. And I didn't know that for a fact because I'd never met him. But anytime I talked to Jason House, you know, because he manages him, Jason's like, yeah, you'd love that kid. And I said, well, if there's ever an opportunity to you know, train him, I would love that opportunity. And so when that came about after his fight after Dober, we started talking, and then he actually, I encouraged him to go to other gyms too. I didn't say, hey, just come here. I wanted him to go see what else was out there and decide what the best fit was for him, even if it wasn't us, because he's a special athlete, and he's somebody that we really enjoy working with. And once we got him in the room, I was like, oh yeah, this is my type of kid. So, and he went from Denver to actually Arizona and checked out some stuff there and liked all those guys there. It's just, you know, timing and fit is the most important thing when you have any type of relationship. And in our coaching staff and our team, it just seemed to fit him the best for what we're doing. And, you know, leading up to that, it's always a little bit nerve-wracking when you go into that first fight with somebody new on both ends, because, you know, his expectation is, man, I want to change and be better. Our expectation is we're going to help you change and be better. And it's gone both ways for me before. But for the most part, we've had a lot of success doing that. And to watch him transform, I was just telling him today, actually, I said, I respect him a ton for what he did inside of the 4 months of our preparation. He's learning a new system, still is, but he's got it down way better than he did 4 months ago. And sure, to learn a new system, though, you got to be really humble, because you're going to get your ass kicked inside of the training room by guys that probably shouldn't be kicking your ass that day. But you're trying to learn new things and expand his game. And when I saw him doing that, you know, I talked to Jason a lot about Alex because we kept tabs about it. When I saw him do that, I gained a lot of respect for him, because that's not easy to do, especially when you're at the level he's already at before he ever came to us. And to take a step back and say, okay, I'm going to decide to grow here, and I'm going to take my lumps in doing so.
And there were lumps.
Yeah, a lot. There were lumps. And there were some frustrating days for sure, and I'd watch him. But I'll tell you what really sets him apart from a lot of people is, I would say to him, hey, man, how we doing? He would say to me after practice, even if he did well or didn't, but even on the most important thing is the days he didn't do well, he would say, I'm still the baddest motherfucker around. And I was like, okay, yeah, Sweet. Now I got the kid that I thought I had, and I definitely now I know he's that kid. And so myself and the coaching staff and the team, we were ecstatic when we saw that. And so it's been such a pleasure. And then to watch him go into the fight and just say, okay, coach, I'm going to submit to you in the sense of your system and process, put all the weight on my shoulders, which I love, like, let's go. And then help him navigate some of those waters, and then watch him perform like he did in his fight was amazing. So all that credit goes to him, but in trusting all of that, it's been a lot of fun so far.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I wanted our audience to see, and why I'm glad you're on the podcast too. And of course, the good looking Coach Mark Montoya himself.
You say that because of my hair?
Lack thereof, but whoa, you still look good. Still look good. But
transporter.
You know, a couple of years ago, you had the big fight with Donald Cerrone, mm-hmm, and then, you know, every time we've done our interviews, all the fans are ripping on you. I get more dislikes for your interviews than anyone else, because look, you came in there.
Yeah, how you gonna tell me that? You told me that one time before I was about to start an interview with you. I'm like, bro, you just spit in my coffee right before you served me.
But the thing is, I love it though, because you're young, you're hungry, you're confident, you want to make a mark in the sport. What people don't realize about you is you're like a sponge, man. You want to learn. You want to get better. You're a confident person. You need confidence. You're not going to walk into the octagon and have the ambitions and the goals that you do without having that type of confidence. But there's going to be growing pains no matter what. But it doesn't matter. You stick to the game plan. You stick and you go through the mud, through the cement, and you come out on top, man. And that's what it's all about. You're going to face adversity. And that's what I want the audience to see, is that you're willing to endure to reach your goals.
Yeah, I appreciate that big time. And like you said, like a lot of it was it wasn't a facade at any point in my career. Like I've always been very transparent with just what I'm thinking and how I feel, you know, I'll execute. But like before I had such a confidence and maybe like an ignorant one at that, you know, a lot of hubris and maybe an ignorant confidence. And it wasn't until kind of really facing that turbulence and the adversity and then making this giant move and then weathering the storms there at the gym and then having to grow and adapt that like, it went from a confidence to like a cultivated clarity. Like it shifted from confidence to clarity, and that clarity brought so much more peace of mind. Like such an even temper where I didn't feel like I had to be this big like boisterous ego or anything. It was like, man, I can smile at you and then still just like beat your ass. And that's like a way cooler place to come from because you're like at peace, man. And that's kind of getting that flow state that I was trying to get. You know, coach will talk about like flipping the switch before we go out to fight. And for me, like, I don't really need to flip a switch up because I'm already so intense. Like I'll fucking redlining it any given second, you know, white knuckle the steering wheel on the way to practice. And so like, for me, it wasn't about taking it so seriously because I already take it too seriously. So for me, it was like, man, just learn how to have fun. Like be a little nice to yourself because, as much shit as I talk out loud, the voice in my head's way more negative. The criticism I give myself is so severe. And so, like, I just had to learn to start being a little nice. Like, man, give yourself a compliment every now and again and just have some fun. And I realized, like, and this was kind of a switch that we made after going to Abu Dhabi together and just training one-on-one and having that time alone. And then, you know, just some other good mentors I had in my corner and even my girlfriend. And like, I realized I came back and I need to stop taking it so seriously. And before, where I was listening to, like either just some gangster ass rap shit or just like something heavy on the way to practice or before sparring, like I found myself like having a little bit more fun with like some Fleetwood Mac or like some, you know, some like
you came out to that for the last
I know we that was great
yeah some Nugent or something, you know, like I started having more fun. I'm in the kitchen, I'm cooking French toast and shaking my hips and having a good time, and I'm like, dude, this is a way cooler fucking vibe. And then I go to the gym and I'm still joking with everybody, busting people's balls, having like a good time. And then it's like, oh, now it's time to go fuck some shit up. Let's go do that, and let's just go treat it like that all the time. Like let's kind of keep this perpetual flow state where you can explode when you need to explode, recover when you need to recover, and just kind of maintain a good energy about you and a good fighting cadence. And so once I was able to flip that switch, everything just became a little brighter. Like everything kind of just seemed more obtainable and just kind of gave me a new, I guess, like a new drive, really, you know, a new perspective. So that was monumental, you know.
So hopefully you'll see more positive likes and comments.
I think so. We might
turn the switch. No, but also if not, like I don't really give a shit either. You know, it's the funniest thing in the world that used to bother me a lot, and now I'm just kind of like, dude, I don't even give a fuck. Like, we're sitting with Elisa, Jason's wife, my manager, and she's like, yeah, because everyone who doesn't know you thinks you're an asshole. And I was like, that used to bother me that everyone just thought I was just a piece of shit, but now it's like, good. Like, I'll be an asshole. I don't care. Like,
why do you think that they misunderstand you? Just your confidence? Or
yeah, I mean, really, like you said, like, this, ever since the Cerrone press or me just going at him, I was really just trying to, like, just break him. And I was doing good at it. And if I could go back, the only thing I do different is win. So, I mean, you know, it's probably just that that attitude and people just misinterpreting it. But people just get like a little snippet and they build their own narrative off it. And that's fine because I'm working on, you know, my narrative. And like you said, like, I really like the story I'm on. I like the path I'm on where it's like, you know, I thought I was going to come in and blow out that big opportunity. And I was like in a really low place when I didn't, because I was so certain that had to happen for me, and it didn't. And so we hit a low and then we came back. We got high on Trinaldo, hit a low against Dover because we thought we had something figured out that we didn't. And so then I had made this huge, like, life-changing adjustment, got to meet these incredible people. And now it's like the opportunities to engage with, like, Mark and Busy and, like, all these coaches, Brandon, you know, all these, like, close-knit friends and mentors and, like, allies I would never had before, all the growth that I experienced, it just would never happen if you didn't hit those lows. You know, that whole idea of breaking down before you break through. And then weathering that adversity and coming back stronger than ever, like, that's the story I want. And now we're on that path. And I feel like, you know, like I said after that fight, like, I feel like I just made my debut. You know, like, we've just only arrived and we just need to keep going, you know?
Yeah, people think that success is this linear pathway, but it's just full of peaks and valleys, yeah. Peaks and valleys, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and then once you let ego go, those losses really become lessons. You know, you can really learn from what you've undergone as opposed to making excuses for it or keeping, like, the whole idea of, like, having a chip on your shoulder. Like, that's almost like a victimizing approach. You know, like, I've got chips on my shoulders. Well, that's like holding a negative outlook, like, woe is me almost. Whereas, like, well, fuck the chips. Like, you hold your opinion, I'm not going to be affected by that opinion. You know, I'm just going to kind of stay in my state of mind and get done what I need to get done. And then at the end of the story, you'll be like, oh, okay, well, I see where he's coming from now, you know. But, yeah, that's fine.
And to add to Donald Cerrone, he did say yesterday, I think, to media that he has one last run in him back at 155.
Okay. Yeah, man. People always ask me, like, you want to run that back? And maybe I do. Like, I felt like I needed to earn it back, you know, and I hadn't done that consistently. And then also, like, it stopped being almost like even entertaining to me, like, where I didn't really care to run anything back. I just wanted to, like, run forward. Like, I just wanted to run forward as hard as I could. And so, like, yeah, if he's what's forward, then, like, it's awesome. If Dober's what's forward, awesome. If not, I don't really have any, like, need for some kind of vengeance or anything. Like, I don't, that was just, it's literally like, thanks for that chapter and thanks for that education. And if we get to do it again, like, I'll do it better this time. But I'm not like holding that over me, because that would be slowing everything else down if I did.
And Coach, I want to get to you now. You've been super busy during this pandemic. Vistar, Rena from Jacksonville during those fights, obviously Abu Dhabi, here at the UFC, these fight nights, the Apex, the pay-per-views. How is it different coaching in this COVID environment without the crowds versus having those loud crowds? Like, is it noticeable that the communication with the fighters is better, worse, the same? Do you even notice at all? Are you numb to it?
No, I think it's for sure easier. There's no sound in there. I mean, yeah. It's like pin drop quiet. And so the communication is good. I'm glad that we had the foresight years ago as a coaching staff to put our own language together when it comes to fighting. We've been doing that my entire career, so that's not something that's new. But all of our coaches and athletes are on the same page when it comes to our language for everything we're doing in fighting. So that helps, because it is quiet in there. And I remember at the beginning being able to really hear the other corner well. I could even hear the announcers before they put the glass up between them and the cage. And so, you know, the communication is absolutely easier. The thing that is a little strange at first for everyone involved is that walkout. And so, yeah. One of the things I've noticed in fighting is, and just managing fighters' expectations, is if we went on a hike, I took you on a hike, and I was like, yo, we're going up to that mountain. There's a lot of different mountains between now and the top of the mountain. But if I explain to you, hey, at mile 2, we're going to encounter this, and at mile 3, we're here, and at 10, we're here, and then finally we get to the top type thing. And if we navigate you through that terrain, you're able to manage expectations. And then when I tell you, hey, Alex, before you walk out, man, it's going to feel even quieter than sparring in the gym. And it's going to, you know, there's going to be this weird silence and it's going to be a little odd. So if we navigate that terrain with them before we get there, because of our experience, it's paid dividends, because the fighters have been able to at least mentally see it. And it's not this big surprise where you think you're at the top of the mountain and you're not. And you're like, oh shit. And you keep hitting these false summits, and then you get these weird things that happen internally. And so, you know, that's that part of it is just taking, again, some foresight from myself and the coaching staff, and then relaying that to the athletes. And then also just from experience, knowing, you know, if we're able to help navigate these guys mentally, physically, they're going to be on point.
And I'm sure hearing the other coaches calling out their instructions, the human chess game differs a little bit, because now you can hear what they're saying. You hear what the announcers are saying too. How is that evolved your coaching right there on the sidelines too, outside of just giving your fighter their instructions?
Well, the announcers I just block out. So they're, you know, they, not that I don't hear them, but for the most part, they're calling the fight. Now, right. The other coaches, now that's something that for sure we will stay in tune for. So if they're just speaking regular, you know, type combinations or takedown or whatever stuff on the ground, then we could key into that. So we've made an absolute effort to be able to pick that up if possible. But that's not our number one goal. Number one goal is to stay on our track and communicate with our athlete and then have that back and forth. When Kraus fought actually in Abu Dhabi, he actually yelled back to me, "What did you say?" And
yep.
But he and I have been working for many years together. So we have that kind of synergy. And he was like, I think he said, "Say that again," type thing. And I was like, and so I repeated it to him. And so we have that synergy and he has that comfort. And yeah, I think the other thing is in the room, you know, when we're training at Factory X, just that high intensity, that high feel of, you know, you can't treat, I always try to preach these guys, you can't treat sparring day and fighting day different than you treat Monday. Mm-hmm. We don't spar on Mondays, you know? So, it's gotta be the same attitude. And like Alex was talking about, one of the things I noticed about him is he just didn't seem like he was having a lot of fun fighting. And he and I talked about that a lot. I said, man, you need to have some fun. Like, this shit's way too hard to have so much pressure and this feeling, you know? And so, and I could say that to him, but it doesn't matter if he doesn't adopt it. And of course he did. And so, but I think the COVID thing's been great for us. I mean, as a team, we've been killing it. And okay. So,
yeah.
And we'll adapt again. I mean, that's why we've been successful for as long as we have, is whatever changes that happen here at the beginning of the year or the first or second quarter of next year, whatever, we'll adapt again. We'll make sure we're on the cutting edge and we'll make sure that we're successful.
Now, Alex, I know there's been some fighters that said they kind of prefer the no fans in attendance so they can hear their coaches, or even I think one of the fighters said they could hear DC calling in,
yeah.
And it kind of helped them in a way. But for you, what do you prefer? Like, do you miss having fans?
You know, that last experience was so, I mean, it was just, the whole thing was so beautiful. And like, I really like the Apex, just the aura of it. You know, it's kind of an intimate setting. It's almost like more incandescent lighting than like the bright, like LED kind of lighting, you know, like in the hospital or school or something. And so I really like the groove there. And then like Coach was saying, you know, being able to respond to the language, which I'm not on that crowd status where I'm like, you know, I'm that keyed in. I'm still working, you know, one thing at a time, but, I really enjoy it. But also, you know, you miss the fans, and like, I'm really excited to kind of be making these changes during this period. So that way, whenever the fans are there, I'm ready for them, because really, I don't know if I was ready for the fans before. You know, I think I let them play a lot into the angst I already had, or if not angst, just the adrenaline that I was dumping, you know, like, I think I let them play into that too much. So this has kind of been like a really beautiful transition period where it's like, we're getting work done, but we're almost getting it done in the shadows. And then, I mean, hell, we have more viewership than ever, but you know what I mean? Like, getting it done almost privately. And then when the fans come back, I'll be ready to command the fans instead of the fans command me.
I'm going to turn my super fan on, because I know we got, you guys got to get over to the PI and train a little bit, but something that's intriguing me, and it's not really discussed. We talk about the GOAT. We talk about all these different things. John Jones moving up to heavyweight. Adesanya going up to 205 against Błachowicz. What the heck's going to happen? Who is John Jones going to fight? Because I think Francis Ngannou is first in line to be fighting Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight title. What makes sense for John Jones? Who's he going to fight? And is Jan's fighting Izzy at 205? Like, it just leaves a lot of question marks, especially if we want to work our way towards having a super fight of Israel and John Jones, pending Israel takes care of business against Jan Błachowicz, and John Jones has a fight, doesn't have a fight. What's your weighing on that?
I think if you're John Jones, you don't do any other fight than a title fight. So
right.
What's the point of going up to heavyweight if you're not fighting Stipe? Or if they're going to have Ngannou fight Stipe first, You know, I don't think that makes that much sense. I think, again, I'm not the matchmakers, and they do a phenomenal job. But from my perspective as a coach and a fan, is John Jones and Stipe, if he's going up, if that's really what he's doing, because he relinquished the 205 belt,
right,
then that should be the fight.
Over Francis first?
Hands down.
I think so, for yeah, sure.
Okay.
I mean, who's beat John Jones?
Right. And I do believe he is the GOAT. Something a coach from San Antonio, Jason, said, Jones is the only guy who's beaten almost like three generations. Yeah, of top combatants or even champions, you know? And nobody else has done that. So for a guy who's completely undefeated, I mean, he's got that one, you know, if he lost.
Yeah, right.
As far as we're concerned.
It's a win.
Yeah, it's a win. Yeah. It's destruction. And then to go up to heavyweight, it only makes sense for him to get that super fight, and especially when you look at like the history of people making similar moves, far less qualified or even just slightly less than what Jones is. There's no reason why he wouldn't, and Stipe is by far the most... That fight excites me so much more than Francis Ngannou versus Stipe or Francis Ngannou versus Jones. Jones versus Stipe is a thrilling idea.
And I think having the perspective of having to game plan and train for John Jones, you know, when Anthony Smith fought him.
Yep.
One of the most daunting tasks I've ever had as a coach is looking at John Jones. He's
crazy.
He's a fighter nobody wants to fight. He's very unpredictable, and he's got amazing technique. His IQ is high. He trusts his coaches. He's got you could say whatever you want about him off the mat. You know, everyone has their opinion there. But in the cage, in the octagon, he's one of the best I've ever seen do it, not only from a TV screen, but live when I've seen him fight other fights, but also when I was coaching against him. He's a phenomenal, one of the best ever for sure, if not the best in that we've ever seen in that octagon. And so, and I know Stipe really well. I was actually his coach for The Ultimate Fighter. I was Stipe's coach on The Ultimate Fighter show when he and DC were on there. And I know Stipe really well. And Stipe is a phenomenal athlete and such an amazing dude. Obviously, he's beat everyone that's come his way. And the
never said no to any fight presented. No.
And he's amazing. And so, to know both of those guys as intimately as I do. That fight is what I think not only should happen, but it's what the fans want to see. And as far as Adesanya goes, why wouldn't he go up to 205? He's how many people want to go win multiple belts? They all want to do it. You just have to prove that you've earned the right to even be in that discussion. And Adesanya's done that, and he's. Who's going to question whether or not? Now, the question I have, though, for Adesanya is, because at 205, there's a big jump. I've done it with Anthony, power-wise, body-wise, the whole thing. Adesanya is an amazing fighter, but is that jump to 205, is that too much? And is the power too overwhelming there? Or is that size body on top of you or against the cage on you, does that stifle what Adesanya is so great at? So because of those questions, you want to see him fight at 205. You're like, okay, man, let's see you do it. And Jan is a big 205er, by the way.
He's a thick biscuit for sure. And as like a less critical thinking coach, I'd be so stoked for that. And I got Adesanya too. I like Jakovic a lot, but I think if Adesanya fills that weight out, he's taking that strap home too.
If Adesanya and Jones fought today at 205, who would you take?
Johnny all day. I got okay. John Jones.
Yeah, for sure. You're saying John Jones versus Adesanya?
At 205 today, if they fought.
I'd take Jones.
Yeah. Take Jones.
Yeah. Jones is built for the weight.
Yeah.
On the note of Lionheart Smith, man, when I proposed the 165-pound weight division, I'm thinking increments of 10. Make welterweight 170, 75. If ever there was a perfect guy for a 195-pound weight division, same. I think that's Lionheart Smith.
Agree. Agree. I wish that... there's always talks about, you know, different weight classes. I'm not saying boxing has it down, but there's too many gaps between some of these weight classes, especially between 55 and 70, 70 and 85, 85, 205. There's too many gaps. And, You have, like, Krause is a tweener too, by the way.
Yeah.
He's, you know, fighting at 70, he's absolutely tall enough to be there. But some of those guys are obviously thicker than him. And so he, you know, he was killing himself to get to 55. It was miserable. And it wasn't the cut. It was 4 or 5 weeks out. And so you weren't getting the athlete you're seeing in there now because he wasn't having any fun training. He was just making weight and being like, man, this isn't even that fun. You know, and so a 10-pound gap or something there, I think would improve the sport. And if you think about that, you'd get more super bites too.
Yes, yeah. You would.
The only thing that gets difficult is the lineage behind the belts, right?
Yeah.
Like when you start going to the history of the champs and things like that, that's the only part that gets a little, like, what do you call a welterweight champ, you know, just the history of that belt.
Well, the sport's so young, you know, we're what, 27 years in? You can always make the history on the fly.
Yeah, that's fair.
I agree. I mean, the NFL did it, right? They had the AFL.
Yep.
And then they combined it to be essentially the AFC, NFC to the NFL.
Hey, if we were counting championships, my Chicago Bears would be the best team in NFL history.
There you go.
One of them right there.
There you go.
Before the Super Bowl era.
Exactly. Yeah. And listen, you want to absolutely pay homage to the entire you know, past and all the champions and all that thing. So I'm not trying to discredit that because those people paved the way. They were the trailblazers for this and they should be held in the highest regard. But present day, I mean, can we not get some new gloves and can we not get some different weight classes? That would be amazing. That I think that would change the sport.
You know, Dana's posting those Instagram videos with those gloves. I think something's triggered in the back of his mind where he's thinking about new gloves with the UFC gloves, you know?
It's definitely coming,
I
right?
I think it's coming.
Yeah, I definitely think it's coming.
I think that's key. I mean, it's going to help everybody. And then you're going to see where that goes, and then we're going to have to evolve and get better from there as well. So, and that's why we're sitting here. I mean, this sport has evolved so much to where it's given a platform to all of us to do what we love to do. But without that, we wouldn't be here. And so let's do it now so we can keep doing this thing. And Dana's been proven to be the front runner of fuck yourself. I'm going to figure out a way to make my company continue to grow. And I don't give a shit what's going on. And I love that.
Yeah.
Hasn't laid off anybody in continuously putting on events week in and week out, whether in the United States or in Abu Dhabi. What other sports organization's done that?
They haven't.
They haven't.
No, yeah. They haven't.
Well, guys, you need to go train. Final thoughts of the Schmo Zone. You want to leave the audience open for them.
You know, we're just looking forward to December. And again, as far as that docket goes, I'm not concerned with any single individual. I'm in the right place. It feels like at the right time. And I have no fears or qualms about it. You know, I'm not scared to lose. I'm not really feel like I'm in a place. I'm not scared of anything right now. I'm exactly where I need to be. And so whoever that opponent is in December, I look forward to it. It'll be an excellent matchup.
And it's the 19th is the date you're targeting?
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to keep manifesting it until it comes to fruition. Yeah.
All right. Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. I just want to thank you guys for having us on. I'm super proud of you guys. It's a pleasure watching someone that hustles their ass off like you've done and both you guys have done. Yeah. And the team work that you guys have done. I've been married for 20 years and been with my wife for 22. So I respect the hell out of that. I understand how hard that is to do. And you guys have showed that with hard work, perseverance, and a little bit of craziness, you're able to do it. And so super proud of you, man, and both you guys have done an amazing job. So keep it up, and thank you for having us on. And anytime you want to talk a little more smack, we're
yeah,
always
let us
available.
Know, man. Again, first full studio experience, so this has been awesome. Thank you.
They need to come back on maybe December 19th when you get back
we
for
can
that
figure fight. Something out. We'll have you guys on again.
Now we're just a duet. Now it's just all like, Mark and Alex.
Yes.
I'm the big spoon because he does have a real little spoon. Ask him about it next time.
That's not next time.
About
what?
Next time.
Don't close out. Call me little spoon, dog.
Little spoon. That's how you're ending it. And I wouldn't be here weren't for her support continuously. She's the best. Big spoon, little spoon, fun stuff.
Okay, you can be the big spoon.
He's the big spoon.
With Professor Busy.
5 week big spoon.
With Professor Busy, you could be the big spoon.
Yeah, okay. With Brandon, I'm definitely the big spoon.
Episode 43 of the Schmo Zone podcast. We are out.